Blog Talk Radio.
Your plans and activities are already stretching you to the max, and then a trusted friend or colleague asks you to do one small project to help out for the cause of the community or your job. What do you say when you're already busy, you're stressed out, you have many things to do, and you just don't know how you can manufacture some more time? Well, we're going to give you a step-by-step plan of action and also some language to use when you're looking at ways to say gracefully and artfully no to that very special friend, colleague, or someone on your job so that you don't lose your job. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and we have a great guest and a wonderful program on today. We're glad that you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and I'm so glad that you are joining us today. When I woke up this morning, I thought it was wintertime. It was 39 degrees here in Boston. Now it's warmed up to about 70, so I'm now reminded that we're really back into the fall season, but it lets me know that winter is right behind us, and those summer days are really clipping away. I'm excited that you're here today. We have a great show planned for you today, and also want to remind you that we're going to be live next week in Los Angeles attending the National Black MBA Association. We have Bill Wells, who is the national chair, lined up as one of our guests. We also have one of the leaders of tomorrow and a former leader of tomorrow, part of that wonderful youth program to bring you. It's going to be a really exciting show as we're on the road. I'm actually here at Bethel AME in Boston, my church today, broadcasting live, so you never know where Focus on Empowerment is going to show up. We are glad that you are with us, and we certainly hope that you'll enjoy today's show. Later on today, we're going to talk to you and give you some information about the Multicultural Conference coming up on October 28th on the campus of University of Massachusetts in Boston. So it's going to be an exciting program today. But first of all, let's sort of de-stress you, give you a plan of action, help you to understand how you can move forward either with your job or certainly at home or with the community work that you do, where you can learn how to say no gracefully and de-stress yourself with communications expert who is broadcasting, actually she's live in San Diego area in California. It's about 9 o'clock in the morning there or 10 o'clock in the morning, Sarita Maben. Hello, Sarita. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Carol. Thank you so much. And I won't tell you what the temperature is here.
Oh, tease us.
I know. I think it's probably the high 70s.
Oh, my goodness. Well, actually, it's about 70-something here, so it warmed up. But my goodness, the mornings are so cold. And I want to give a big shout-out because I have Southern California listeners who tune in all the time. So I'm just hoping that they're having a great day as well.
Wonderful. Well, it's good to be here. Thank you, Carol.
I'm so glad. You know, you've traveled around the world. You were an Army brat. You name yourself as an Army brat. You've spoken at six or seven different countries, including Iceland. I remember when you went to Iceland some years ago. So you have a pretty good sense of what people's needs are. And before we actually talk about the topic, with all of the work that you're doing and the professional speaking that you're doing, what comes up over and over again with the audiences that you talk to and present your materials to, Sarita Maben?
Yes, you know, it's interesting because the one thing that comes up a lot is people have concerns, but they're not sure how to address them tactfully without mm-hmm. alienating the other person. So mm-hmm. it always goes back to the question of what do I say, you know, how do I approach this? So I love sharing different phrases and possible approaches.
Right, and you know, it's so important too because in this age of multiculturalism and global diversity and other ways that people are expressing themselves or self-identifying, far too often a lot of people, because they don't know what to say, they won't say anything at all.
Exactly.
And that may be offensive to someone as well. So let's just dive right into, when I read this some months ago, I said, I have got to have Sarita on the show, not just because of this, but because I think this is just so important. And you have like four different attributes, like three different avenues in terms of dealing with no and how to say no nicely, and it comes from the document and the book that you have with the same subject line. So let's talk about, first of all, the compliment plus no, such as, I appreciate you thinking of me, however, I'm going to opt out. Talk to us about that section.
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons that people hate to say no is that they feel that they're in some way dismissive or that they'll hurt the other person's feelings or perhaps not acknowledge them properly. So when we give them their due by complimenting, you know, sometimes we might even need to say, you know, I know you've put a lot of work into that project. Unfortunately, I won't be able to participate. Or I really appreciate your thinking of me. However, I can't attend. And when you give someone a thank you or I appreciate, all of those people don't realize sometimes are considered compliments. Just simply saying thank you to someone can be considered a compliment. It softens the no.
Softens the blow too.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So again, you're acknowledging and recognizing that person first, which is very important, and then you are speaking up for yourself, because what we're really talking about is empowering yourself. This show talks about empowerment. Mm-hmm. It's important to empower yourself, and so often when you don't say no, then you take away your own power, and then when the stress hits and you realize you've taken on much more than you should have, then you become angry not just at yourself, you become angry at the person who actually asked you to do the project, do the favor, or whatever it happens to be.
Exactly. And even worse, sometimes you can't make good on the promise, which mm-hmm. reflects poorly on you in the end. So it's better to go ahead and say no up front rather than having it come back to bite you later.
And this is what we're trying to teach people, these skills. Another one that you have down here in the same section, thank you, but my plate is full. Why is that an important response, or who should you actually direct that to?
Well, when you say thank you, but my plate is full, I think it goes back to exactly what you were saying a moment ago. We're empowering ourselves. Sometimes in our interest to please others, we overlook the fact that we are not meeting our own needs. And so the thank you does give them their compliment. However, my plate is full is, of course, again, back to empowering yourself, acknowledging that you already have enough to do and can't do anything additional.
Sounds good. Then another one in the same section. This sounds like a great project, yet I won't be able to participate. Talk to us about that one and how you would use that with a friend or a colleague.
Well, I think all of these fall in that first category of compliment plus no.
Yes.
And so any way that you can acknowledge the other person, whether it be saying thank you or, you know, I appreciate the offer, I think all of those fall in that first category of compliment. I'm eager to get to that second category, though, the empathy plus no.
Uh-huh.
And that's okay. You probably see that on the list, but I don't want to jump ahead of myself here.
No, that's fine, because I just want to stay here just for another minute or so, because I think so often people will quickly say, I just don't have time. You know, they just automatically, you know, just talk about their own issues and their own concerns without really acknowledging the other person, particularly if somebody has come up to you and they've thought about this for a long time and maybe they're a little intimidated and they didn't know how to approach you. And if you just blurt out to the person, I just don't have time, I can't do it, and then your facial expression literally crushes them. I mean, that can do more damage than good.
Well, the other problem with saying I don't have time is that's an excuse. And so when we say I don't have time, or I have to be somewhere else, or I can't do it right now, maybe later, all of those will come back to haunt us, because at some point the person may come back next week. Do you have time this week?
So
the problem with using any kind of excuse, like I don't have time, or maybe later, or I can't do it right now, I'm too busy, or I have something else to do, all of those can be easily negated the next week. And so that's really just a temporary escape by saying, making some sort of excuse. I always think excuse making is the worst fate.
Huh. And that's because we're chickens, too. We don't want to come out and tell somebody, I just don't really have the time now or ever to work on this project.
Or ever is the operative word. That's what we really want to say, or ever.
Go away.
But I think if we stick with the compliment plus no, and simply saying, you know, this really does sound like a great opportunity, unfortunately I'm not available, or something to that effect, we've then given them no excuse to grab onto. We've just simply acknowledged them and then said no. But, again, the excuse-making tends to come back to haunt us, because later they'll be coming back. You know, is this a good time? Are you done with the budget? Is your busy season over? Do you have time now? All of that will come back later. So, again, sticking with compliment plus no.
Right, they're just hovering around waiting for that opportune time for you to actually have time. And again, your message to them, I mean, you're almost sending mixed messages to someone. You're sending a message that gives them hope that there may come an opportunity for you to actually work on the project or work on the assignment. Let's move down to the empathy area, which you want to dive right into, and this I think is very important. The first one you say is, I know you need help with this, however, I'm not available. First of all, tell us the difference between compliment and empathy.
Well, you know, it's funny because I always, when I talk about this in my presentations, I always refer to empathy as a close cousin of compliment. So, in other words, I think it's related in some way. It's a relative because it does also acknowledge the other person. The difference is the empathy, it really kind of gets a little bit more at how the other person might be feeling.
Uh-huh.
So we might say something like, I know you really do need somebody to serve in this position, however I'm not available, or I really know you need help with this committee. So you're acknowledging them and also pointing out, kind of feeling their pain in some way, or acknowledging
mm-hmm.
their pain. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's important because one of the old adages that you've probably heard is people don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think regardless of whatever's going on with us, I think it's important to first say, you know, I know you really put a lot of work into that. I know you're really swamped. I understand that you need somebody to do this for you. So we want to at least let them know that we understand where they're coming from.
Now, in the same category, you almost leave yourself on the hook with the response, I'm not able to attend, but would love to help you in another way. When is that the appropriate response to give?
You know, quite often that's the appropriate response because, as you said a moment ago, I think you hit the nail on the head. You said, we're chicken.
Yeah.
So especially if you're, I'll have a chance briefly later to highlight the five traits that cause us to bring stress on ourselves, and one of those is people-pleasing. And so the people pleasers tend not to want to just leave that naked. You know, they don't want to just say, I know you need some help, however, I'm not available. They have an urge to want to please and help. And so I always give people in my audiences permission to offer some alternatives. So you might say, you know, I know you really do need some help on this committee. Unfortunately, I'm not able to serve. However, I would be willing to make a donation, or however, I would be willing to advertise it to my colleagues, or whatever it is you're willing to do. The one thing I caution on that one, though, is a lot of people will say, well, I'll just say, well, I can't do it, but so-and-so can.
Oh,
and I said, the worst thing you could do is throw somebody else under the bus, so to speak, because then you'll have another problem on your hands. So I said the only time that's acceptable is if someone has said to you, put my name in if you hear about an opportunity like this.
Okay.
And, for example, when I used to work in the university administration world, I was a frustrated speaker at that time before I became a professional speaker. And I used to always tell people, if there's an opportunity to speak, put my name in. And so they might say, you know, this really sounds intriguing and interesting. However, I'm not able to do it. However, you might check with Sarita. She seems to have an interest in this type of project.
Mm-hmm.
Again, only if given permission, though.
Right. I mean, that's you're clearly sort of setting the groundwork in advance for some kind of future opportunity that you want.
Mm.
But it certainly isn't appropriate for someone who doesn't happen to attend the meeting. You ever gone to a meeting and the one person who really needs to be there isn't, and then that person gets volunteered for everything.
Exactly.
Because that's not cool.
Not cool at all. Not cool at all.
And you know, it's so interesting just because I've done a workshop on the difference between empathy and sympathy, and they're very, very different. So I liked what you're saying about how empathy is used in this manner in terms of you feeling for the person, but still standing up for your own rights and empowering yourself so that you don't throw yourself under the bus.
Exactly.
So let's move on and talk about choosing to say no. And your first line here is, I've chosen to pass on that offer. Now, that sounds very formal, Sarita.
Well, you know, I think we can adjust it, obviously, depending on who we're speaking with. But, you know, and one of my favorite things to say is, I'm going to choose to opt out on that, or I'm going to choose to pass. For me, chosen sounds very formal, but sometimes I'll say, you know what, I'm gonna choose to pass on that one. I'm gonna choose to opt out, or I like the word choose because it implies choice. And I find it very hard for people to argue with that. You know, if you say, you know what, I'm going to choose to opt out of the committee this year, it's very hard for someone to say, you can't choose that, or why are you choosing that? To argue with someone's choice when they've stated that this is a choice is a little bit hard for the other person to come back to. Because that's one of the questions I get asked frequently is, what if they say, why? You know, why are you choosing that, or why can't you go? And so then once we get into this long, drawn-out excuse-making mode or reason we can't go, we're in deep trouble. So it's really what they used to call back, and I'm dating myself now. Some people listening may not even know what this is, but they used to call it the broken record technique.
Oh.
which is simply repeating what you've said. And it reminds me of my 18-year-old daughter, you know, during her teen years. You know, she would say, you can't do this, or no, I don't think that'll be possible. Well, why not? Why can't I do that? And I'd say, you know what, that's just the choice I've made, or I've just chosen to not allow you to go. Well, why can't I? I've just made my choice. You can't go. And just repeating it over and over, it's just the best choice. I think it makes the most sense. Anything that reiterates that that's my choice, it just made the most sense to me. I think that's just the right choice for me. It's a broken record of just going back and reiterating what you've said rather than trying to make excuse or give reasons, because those can be easily knocked over.
Yeah, I think it also depends on the relationship that you have with the person you're talking to, or the circumstances if you're in a large meeting. I think it can work for or against you. If you say, I choose not to do this, I choose to pass at this point in time, I think it depends on how you say it, because if you say it in a negative way or in a way that shows that you're picking and choosing and you have the time but you just really don't want to be bothered with this particular project, that can work against you. So you would probably have to be careful about how you would use that kind of terminology. What about that doesn't work for me?
I like that doesn't work for me. In fact, truth be told, you were mentioning that I've chosen not to go sounds formal.
Yes.
And I, you know, when I'm in a professional situation, I always like to, I kind of lean more towards formal, and I lean more towards saying things like, you know, I've chosen not to go, or I've chosen to pass. But that doesn't work for me actually is a great phrase, because I see that as one that can be used both in a professional and personal setting. To just say, you know what, that doesn't work for me, which leaves it open and doesn't make excuses. You're not doing the tap dance, but it just lets the other person know that it's not going to happen, but you say it in a positive way. So I tend to be a fan of that one. As a professional and a personal phrase, that doesn't work for me. And maybe that's less formal than I've chosen to pass. Because truth be told, we always make choices about how to spend our time. I believe that everything we do, it's about choosing to do this versus that. Maybe we don't want to let them know that they weren't chosen. It was what you were getting at. We don't want to make it look like we could have done it, but we chose not to. But I think we always are choosing not to.
Now, you have one comment. You have one phrase here that says, that's not on my radar right now. When would you use that one?
That's funny. I tend to use that one I guess I use that professionally as well. I was going to say I use that in my personal life, but I think, again, that's just code for it's not a priority, I'm not choosing to do it, and it's, again, a more informal way of just saying, you know what, it's not something that it's on my radar right now, which is, again, code for it's not a priority right now. I'm choosing not to do it right now. But as you say, it sounds a little bit softer or less formal.
Right. And obviously, all of these should be considered based on the circumstances that you're in. Certainly, if you're on your job and it's 4:30 and your boss comes in and there is a major project that deals with your particular merit pay or your performance, and that project has to be finished by 5 o'clock, and you thought you were going to walk out the door at 5 o'clock, wouldn't be a good idea to say, I choose not to do this at this time.
Or even worse, it's not on my radar right now, boss.
Right.
In fact, you might remember something called the guilt-free yes, and I want to make sure we do ultimately get to that as well, because that one is particularly useful for situations where you don't have the real it would not be wise to say no. And I always think that there are situations like the one you described. Bosses are on the top of that list where we it would not be wise to say no, but we'll talk in a little bit about the guilt-free yes.
That's true. We'll talk about that right now. I want to also...
Well, let me before we go to the guilt-free yes, I want to just tell you my favorite of all of the phrases, and it was one that is similar to that doesn't work for me. You might recall the phrase, I'm just not feeling it.
Oh, yes.
Which is my favorite phrase for my personal life, you know, because, again, you said, I've chosen not to do it. Sounds formal. At work,
right.
I would say that, or in business, but personally, I tend to find myself saying, I'm just not feeling it.
Uh-huh.
And that's my most informal way to say no.
It should be used according to whether you're at work or whether you're at home working with family. So clearly, you can look at these various ways to say no and pick out the particular environment that they should be used.
Exactly.
We're talking to Sarita Maben, and she is the author of If You Can't Say Something Nice, What Do You Say? And it's available at Amazon.com. And you can reach Sarita at www.saritamaybin.com. And that's SaritaMaybin.com. And you also have SaritaTalk.com, too. Isn't that still operable?
It is still operable. In fact, it'll take you to the same place.
Ah, great. Yeah, very good. Now, let's talk about guilt-free yes and why and when you should use these kinds of language terms and phrases in work or certainly with a project or at home.
Yes. In fact, the phrases that I always suggest for the guilt-free yes are phrases such as soon as, if, and when. And I think there are times, and I say this especially when we're talking about bosses, which you alluded to a moment ago, we can't, it might not be in our best interest to say no. So sometimes we have to set boundaries.
If you want to keep your job, right.
If you want to keep your job, exactly. You might not want to say no. And I think that's the biggest concern I hear from people in my audiences when we're talking about how to say no nicely. You know, people are saying, well, wait a minute, I can't really realistically say no to the boss.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do have an option of doing what I call the guilt-free yes. And I call it guilt-free because we can say yes without causing ourselves major angst. And it's about setting boundaries. And I use the words, once again, if, when, and as soon as. So if the boss says, I need this right now, we might say, you know, boss, I'd love to get that for you right now if you'll let me know where it falls in the priority with the other two projects I'm working on for you.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you're asking the boss to set the priority because in reality, they can't get all three things in the next hour. So something
right.
has got to go to the top of the list, and it's up to him to let you know which one that is. So, you know, if you let me know where this falls in the priority is a way of drawing boundaries and getting further instruction from the person making the request.
Now, would that possibly be what you'd use if, in fact, again, going back to that 4:30 in the afternoon example, and
exactly.
I remember years ago when I was working for a large company and got one of those 4:30 p.m. requests. I think
mm-hmm.
I actually gave it to the assistant that I was working with and got a lot of pushback. So here you're giving the boss the opportunity to help structure the priorities so that you can then make a decision which you choose to do.
Exactly, and I hate to use the overused phrase, but you're basically saying to the boss, help me help you. So you are asking them to set some priorities because realistically, if everything can't get done, what's the most important?
Mm-hmm. Now, when would you use the expression, I'll get that done for you as soon as I finish what I'm working on?
You know, it's funny. The first example that popped in my head is actually a home example. You know, I think about when my daughter was younger and she'd come home and then she'd immediately want something. You know, I need to get this right now.
Right.
And I think our coworkers, our kids, our colleagues, friends, family members can really be pushing us and pulling us if we don't set some sort of boundaries. And so we might be in the middle of something and need to say, mm-hmm. you know, I'd love to get that for you as soon as I finish up on this project I'm working on right now, or as soon as I get this done, I'll go ahead and get started on that for you. So we do need to set a little bit of boundary. Otherwise, we really do get pushed and pulled at the whim of other people.
Exactly. And again, we're all talking about empowering yourself. We're talking about ways that you can establish the parameters and take as much control as possible back into your own sphere instead of giving it all away, which unfortunately a lot of people do. Now, what do you say to a person who is the perpetual volunteer? And you know, Sarita, we know folks who just volunteer for everything. They get themselves involved in everything, and they finish nothing because they're just too overwhelmed. How would you use these phrases with that kind of person or personality?
Well, you know, that's a great example because I find that there are people who constantly raise their hand, but nothing gets completed. And sometimes if we're the person in the position to dole out the assignments, and we're, for example, the head of a committee, and there's that person's hand up in the air again, I think we have the option of saying, you know what, I'd love to have you involved in this new project as soon as we make some progress on your current committee, or as soon as you're as soon as we wrap up, or when you begin to wrap up some of these other projects, I would love to include you in this new one.
Uh-huh.
So, again, it's really almost setting boundaries for the other person who doesn't seem to know how to do it for themselves.
Right, right. And there are lots of people out there like that, an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people like that. And sometimes I fall in that same category
mm-hmm.
where you want to help out so much, and the conversation or the discussion points are so persuasive, and you say, yes, I want to jump in and help, even though you've got 50 other projects that haven't even gotten started yet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because the other thing that's kind of nice about this is you can mix and match it with the three ways to say no that we talked about, the compliment, empathy, and choose. So we could
uh-huh.
say something like, you know, I really appreciate your offering, but my plate is full right now. When I finish up with some of my current assignments, I'd be happy to consider that.
Mm-hmm.
So you've really just now said, thank you, I'm complimenting, my plate is full, which is no, and when I finish up with some others, it's a kind of setting the boundaries, I'd be happy to revisit this possibility.
And you can see all of these with Sarita Maben's book, If You Can't Say Something Nice, What Do You Say? And all of these can be reviewed and used accordingly, and I think they're just great terminologies. Now, all of this really, I think the umbrella with this, we want to prevent is stress. And I want to just turn our attention now and talk to Sarita about trying to de-stress our lives, and a lot of it has to do with being assertive and being proactive and helping people to understand the opportunities that they have to just take back control of their lives, and that's with the stress concept that you have. Talk to us about that and how you can de-stress your life with the 5 points of stress that
mm-hmm.
can help you to take control of your life.
Oh, I'd love to. In fact, I was mentioning to you briefly before we went on the air that I had posted some notes on my Facebook page about the
yes.
fact that we were going to talk. I asked the question. I said, which 5 traits cause us to bring stress and angst upon ourselves? And
right.
I had to chuckle because there were a couple respondents who said, what is it, greed, lust, gossip? You know, they had all these juicy things.
I
had to respond to them. I said, wow, your stuff sounds way more intriguing than anything I'm going to talk about. But and the things that I'm going to mention are such simple things. They're not nearly as juicy and whatever as those things. But
right.
but the 5 different things are things that are our own personality traits, which I think is kind of amusing to me because it's so easy for us to point the finger and blame other people for our stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they didn't have me do this, or if they didn't miss the deadline, or if they didn't get this, not complete the project. But the 5 things that I always like to talk a lot about, and I also, when I do this in my seminars, I do a little visual survey where I have the people stand up based on which ones they recognize. And
mm-hmm.
some people tell me, wow, I'm going to get an aerobic workout because I'm going to be jumping up and down. And certainly I recognize myself in at least 2 of these.
Okay.
So the first one is perfectionism.
What about the first one?
The number 1 of the 5 is perfectionism, and again, I'm standing up on this one.
Know about that one too.
Yeah. So we those of us who are perfectionists sometimes bring stress on ourselves, and I always say that the reason that this is a big cause of stress is if we're perfectionists, we often feel like we can do it better and faster than anyone else,
mm-hmm.
and we sometimes don't ask for help. And so the message I give to the perfectionists in my audiences is usually ask for help. That's one of the
– that's tough for some people to do because they're used to being
is.
In control. They don't want to give up control. They don't know how to give up control.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know how to say, help me. I need some help.
Well, you know, and we always have some very interesting discussion about this because I always say that one of the clever ways to ask for help rather than making without making ourselves look weak, is instead of coming from a place of weakness, come from a place of the other person's strength. So, mm-hmm. for example, to say to someone, you know, you really are great, you know, at fundraising. You know, you're really good at talking to people and having them support your cause. I really would appreciate your expertise on this project. So if we're focusing it on the other person and their strong suit, it doesn't look so much like, help me, I can't
right,
do it all.
Right.
So that's a little trick that I guess I've tried to use because I'm one of those people that doesn't like to ask for help.
You know, my daughter, my older daughter, reminds me all the time when she was younger and my kids were younger and it was time for her to do the dishes. I would always say, oh, I'll be glad. Now you can help me do the dishes or help mm-hmm. me do something. So it was like I was extending an invitation for her to be a part of that activity.
Right. It's kind of like, wow, now you have the opportunity. It's like
right.
the opportunity to be involved. It's the difference between you get to help me versus you have
That's
to help
right.
me.
That's right. So it's the semantics and the terminology can, again, put you in a position where you don't feel like you're weak and you're just out there just desperate for help, but no, you're actually asking someone to give you a hand.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's interesting about that is, as perfectionists, people tend to look at us and say, oh, she's got it handled, and she's got it covered, or he's got
right.
everything under control. And
right.
and secretly we're going, you know, help, help. But giving
help.
That appearance of having everything together ends up making us more stressed because people don't think to ask us, do you need help?
So true. That is so true. You know, Larry Winget, who is also a professional speaker and now, I mean, big time on television, excuse me, has done quite well. He said something years ago. I literally have this on my refrigerator, and our friend, our mutual friend, Deborah Gould in New Orleans, reminded me of this about 2 years ago. And he said, implement first, perfect later.
Yeah.
I think that is just so right on. And that's the philosophy that I use now, especially when a project is going to be started and
mm-hmm.
you know, you're trying to make sure it just is executed perfectly. It's not going to be executed perfectly. You're going to have to retool and retweet on whatever it is. So I just always think about that. Implement first and perfect later.
You know, it's funny that you should mention Larry Winget because I actually, his voice was also in the back of my head. I remember when I was as you mentioned my book a couple times. I also have a couple chapters in some other books, the Productivity Path which is on employee performance and Career Compass for Women. And I remember when I first got asked to submit a chapter, I was a little nervous about making it perfect. And I remember Larry said very bluntly at a meeting I was at something very similar. He goes the chapter I have or the book that I have. Or the product that I have, he says, the crappy product that I have is better than the one that you don't have.
That was
actually Larry's more blunt version of implement first, perfect later. Because so I thought, you're right. Having something is better than having nothing.
Right.
And
right.
But I'm going to put that on my refrigerator now. Implement first, perfect
implement
later.
Implement first, perfect. It is literally, I just wrote it out. I even haven't typed it out. I just, when she told that to me, I just put it on a scrap piece of paper, and it's been on my refrigerator for 2 years.
Wow.
And I have
wow.
to remind myself about that all the time because that book I need to finish writing or
mm-hmm.
the chapter I need to do or something, some other project. Again, you get so focused on the minutiae and the details, and then you run out of time, and then nothing
exactly.
gets done. Yeah,
yep.
so true.
That's perfect.
Talk to us about trying to fix or control others. Whew, that's a big one.
That is a big one, and sadly, when I do the survey, I stand up along with the group on that one as well. You know, what's that expression, we teach that which we most need to learn?
That's right.
That's what I always tell my audience is, I'm making note to self over here in the corner, you know, even as I'm speaking. But, you know, I love telling, one of my favorite stories that I love to tell in my presentations is the story about my daughter, who now is 18. She's a freshman in college. But before
right.
she was, which is amazing to me, I don't know where the time has gone, but I always love telling the story about how before she was born, it occurred to me I'd had no official parenting training, and so I did some research.
Really?
I know, right? And most people, and I always take a survey in the audience, and almost no one raises their hand, so nobody's had any training. So I always tell them about, you know, at the time I was in the university world, I was an educator, and I said, I'm going to do some research. So for me, that was a 1-year subscription to the Parenting Magazine. And I always share about the one thing they said in there that really struck me, which was, by the age of 4, your child's personality is formed, and that's who they're going to be forever. And so I tell them that, you know, I read on, and then after my 1 year reading, I was pretty horrified because it occurred to me that in reading the magazine, the parenting magazine, I had learned more about dealing with my coworkers than I had about how to deal with my daughter. And the true test, I always ask them to try this out. I always ask them to, when they go back from the presentation and someone comes up to them and makes the nasty comment, or says something that stresses them out, that they're supposed to, in the back of their mind, simply think, they've been this way since they were 4 years old.
I love that.
And is that not shocking when you think about, they've been this way for a while, so whoever it is they're being has nothing to do with you. It's all about who they've been since they were 4 years old.
Right.
And when I go back to companies, people tell me, oh, my gosh, Sarita, that works. That's the one thing they seem to remember is just thinking to themselves, this person has been this way for a very long time. And it really kind of helps us get over that urge to try to fix and control and change people, because we have to acknowledge they've been this way for a while. So how can we coexist with who they are and not try to make them into someone else?
You know, that would probably work, especially when you're in a conversation, and this happens quite frequently, you're in a conversation with person A, and then person B comes up and hijacks your conversation. And then your conversation gets lost in the cloud somewhere, and then it's all about person B. Has that happened to you?
You know, it's funny. That's a situation that happens a lot, but it occurs to me I don't get to discuss that a lot with my audiences. However, I think there's two things that come to mind. One is to acknowledge that if they do that, that's probably who they are.
Right.
And truth be told, I think I've been that person sometimes that's hijacked the conversation. but I think when that happens, that's who the person is, and to acknowledge that. However, I think it's also important to get the conversation back at some point.
Right.
Which is a whole skill in itself. In fact, in a different context, I often talk about what I call the 5-word or less foot in the door. And the 5-word or less foot in the door is when someone interrupts you in a meeting or in a situation like this, person A, person B, to 5-word or less, which is just something like, excuse me, or good point, or I like that. You know, all of those are 5 words or less. Or even saying their name, Carol, you know, that's great. You know, let me also interject that blah, blah, blah. So but I think sometimes to try to talk over them doesn't work. I think we have to, again, acknowledge that that's who they are, maybe give them a minute, and then use our excuse me or good point or I like that or and then move on with your comment. So that's a way to get your foot in the door with 5 words or less.
Another thing also with this person who's trying to control or fix others in a conversation like that, if it's appropriate, I've done this, is just simply gently put your hand on the person's either wrist or arm or shoulder just to you sort of connect with them on a different level, and then you begin speaking. Look them right in the face or, you know, look them right in the eyes, you know, with your hand on their shoulder or on your hand, and then you begin your conversation, and then you begin to pull it back.
No, I like that. I like that. And I think we can even combine the two, and as we slightly touch them, we can say, I like that, or that's a good point. And we can then ease back into the conversation. But I like the added bit with the touch, because I think that makes them still feel connected to the conversation.
Absolutely. And it's also a way to get their attention. Again, a different way to get their attention. But let's talk about people pleasing. Ooh, this is another one. This is for the person who volunteers for everything.
Well, you know, and the reality is I think we have talked about them significantly already with the three ways to say no nicely, the compliment, empathy, and choose, as well as the guilt-free yes. And when I speak in my audiences, I usually talk about the 5 traits, and then I share with them that I've got a whole section for the people pleasers, which is the 3 ways to say no nicely. Because I really think with the people pleasers, those are the ones who struggle with saying no, and more importantly, with the guilt-free yes. They struggle when they have to say, or they feel they need to say yes, but how to do that without getting run over.
Right.
So I think I've probably said all I need to say about the people pleasers. I think it does go back to saying no.
I think that, you know, there's probably some underlying issues, too, with somebody who always has to volunteer, always has to please someone else. I don't know if there are any personality deficiencies there or maybe some character deficiencies or a real need to be reassured that they're wanted or valued or needed. But that's another workshop altogether.
Well, you know, and I will say that it's funny you should mention that, because one of the things that I often share is that I think we were all, especially women more than men, were brainwashed to please. And and it goes back to the title of my book, If You Can't Say Something Nice, What Do You Say? Because, you know, we all kind of chuckle over how our parents told us when we were growing up, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, which is a total people pleaser kind of response. And so we've been very much, again, especially as little girls and then as women, to not say anything if it's not nice. And I think that's where we get into trouble with not setting boundaries and saying no.
Huh. Well, what about the lack of priorities? What's that all about?
It's funny because I actually think that the reality with lack of priorities is it's more a matter of too many priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm always reminded by people, well, it's not that I don't have any priorities, it's just that I have too many priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite things that I love discussing is this notion of, are we spending our time on those things that are urgent or on those things that are important? And I'm sure you've heard that many times. Some of our listeners have probably heard the distinction between things that are urgent versus things that are important.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that what ends up happening, most people that I speak to at companies will share that they spend their whole day chasing deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And so the things that are really...
That's the urgent.
And ironically, the things that really move us forward in our lives are things that have absolutely no deadline.
True.
It's things like, someday I'm going to write that book. Someday I'm going to take that trip. Someday I'm going to go back to school and get that degree. Someday I'm going to get the certification. Someday I'm going to, whatever, fill in the blank. And I always love having my audience participants do an activity where they actually share what their someday I will is, what's on their so-called bucket list. Because those are the things that are most meaningful, but ironically, none of those things have deadlines, which means we could really procrastinate them out of existence.
Huh, that's a great comment. And that is so true. And we end up daydreaming. We're sitting at work at 2:30 in the afternoon, getting a little sleepy, wondering, you know, all these things, why am I here? I want to be on the beach, or I want to work elsewhere, or whatever. And then the 4:30 request comes in, and you've got to choose to respond to your boss accordingly. And then that's when the urgency takes over.
I think one thing that's interesting, too, is I always tell people that when I went from working in university administration for many years and having an official boss or official supervisor to being in business for myself, the biggest shock was that there were no deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now, of course, it's almost 17 years that I've been working on my own, but it occurred to me that one of the first things I needed to do was set some structure, set some deadlines. You know, by how many people will I contact by the end of the week? When will I get this proposal? Now, proposals have deadlines, but often there are opportunities that don't have set deadlines. So following up with clients, pursuing opportunities, I had to create some structure. Otherwise, I could just procrastinate myself right out of business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our entrepreneurs who are listening might totally relate to the fact that when you're in business for yourself, you have to create that structure and create deadlines. Otherwise, nothing happens. So there's no urgency, but it sure is important.
Right, and I think that really makes it difficult for some people to stay in business because they, for whatever reason, can't or haven't developed the discipline of getting the job done, getting those proposals out the door, making those phone calls, making sure that you get X number of bookings or client meetings or whatever every week or so, because that's how you stay in business. And why some people say, no, you know, I like the comfort of being around other people, which means that they're probably better suited for a job where they're working for somebody else, because that level of discipline is very difficult. It's difficult to maintain, and it's difficult to move to a higher level. Let's talk about the last thing, overanalyzing. Ooh, that's a big one.
You know, I one of the things that I think it is funny is that we sometimes waste a lot of energy thinking about things and saying, I wonder what they meant by that. You know, I wonder what's going on there. I wonder what their intention is. So I always just say, you know, ask. You know, we might need to, one of my favorite phrases when I share my top 10 phrases, which is a whole other discussion in itself, I talk about the two-part phrase, which is I noticed and I'm wondering. So you might need to say to someone, you know, I noticed this didn't get done as we discussed it. I'm wondering what your thoughts are, or I'm noticing this didn't happen. I'm wondering what went wrong. So we might need to ask some questions rather than sitting back thinking, I wonder what's going on. The other part of that is the analysis paralysis.
Yes.
You know, where we could overanalyze things to the point of doing nothing. And,
yes.
and I think that expression that you like, the one on your refrigerator, applies here again. You know,
so
implement
true.
First, perfect later, because we could really analyze to death and take no action.
Mm-hmm. So true. So very true. I've been on some boards, very wonderful folks who are well-prepared, highly educated, and boy, can they sit in a room and analyze things right out of existence, literally.
Yep.
It's so frustrating. And then you come back, you know, a couple of weeks or a couple of months later, and nothing's been done because you're still stuck on this. And that's really tied in with perfection, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of these are tied together. So that
yep.
level of perfectionism,
exactly.
overanalyzing just absolutely compromises the job and the productivity and the stress that can be relieved from you just because you're just holding on to things way too tight.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, this is...
So, yeah, that's it. So, yeah, anyway, I was just going to say, isn't it funny that everything is interrelated? Yes.
So true, so true. This has been great, and I've just enjoyed this. I've learned an awful lot. I'm thinking about... I need to think about some of these comments myself, these
mm-hmm.
phrases myself. We've been talking to Sarita Maben, and she is the author of many chapters and other books, but also her book, If You Can't Say Something Nice, What Do You Say? And that's available on Amazon.com, and her website is www.saritamaben, and that's MayBin.com. Should we give your phone number out also?
Yes, that would be great. That's the 760-439-8086.
Excellent, excellent. And in closing, what's on the horizon for you? New countries to conquer in terms of speaking? New books? Tell us what you're working on where you're not trying to procrastinate or take on too much or controlled way too many other people, Sarita Maben.
Well, you know, I actually do have, I'm not conquering any new countries in the next couple months. It's all domestic trips, speaking for different audiences. But one thing that I'm really excited about and will be advertising in my communique, which is my monthly email, is some webinars. I have different clients that are now doing some webinars, and I'm thinking, wow, I can actually present and not even leave the house. So that's
right.
something that's being added to my repertoire, and certainly if folks want to email me, saritatalk@aol.com, I can put them on my email list, and every month I let them know what's happening and where I'll be speaking.
It's a terrific newsletter, too, and obviously, I mean, we've known each other for quite a while, but it was your newsletters that prompted me to say, I need to have you on the show because these are topics that I think our listening audience will be very interested in learning more about. We've actually had people in the chat room listening attentively, so hopefully this has been really helpful for those who have been on board. Sarita Maben, thank you so much for being a guest on my program, and now you've helped us and taught us how to say no gracefully without losing friends, colleagues, or definitely our job.
Thank you, Carol. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now. Okay. We're going to switch gears and put on a little tribute music for a few minutes and then come back and talk to you about something that's near and dear to my heart, the upcoming multicultural conference next month. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I've been in the field of diversity and multiculturalism for about 23 years. I've been in business for 23 years, and very early on became involved in management training programs and working with different people all over the United States and then soon outside of the United States. One thing led to another, and then I found myself doing a lot of diversity work. And back in the very early 90s, the word diversity was a hot topic. It was a hot trend. And a lot of the statistics that were being generated by various think tanks really made us project into the future in terms of what our world was going to look like and what our country was going to look like. Well, all these years later, I thought that the whole concept of diversity and multiculturalism would be passe, we would really have gotten it, and things would really move to the point where it was no longer necessary. Well, that's not the case. When you look at what's taking place, certainly in the United States, with some of the negative campaigning that's gone on with our primary season that just ended a few days ago, or certainly with our general election, with our midterm election, with the terminology that is, I think, quite disrespectful for our president that's being targeted at our president of the United States, or certainly with our first lady, by some of the candidates out there or some of the organizations or the political action groups. It just lets me know that certainly here in the United States, multiculturalism is a very important issue. And then as I work and connect with my colleagues across the globe, I realize that, yes, multiculturalism definitely is a subject that needs to be discussed and needs to be a part of the fabric of every single thing that we do, whether you are living or working in a very small community or whether you're working in a thriving metropolis. So with that said, about 2 years ago, I was working on my very first multicultural conference with the Multicultural Symposium Series. Now, three conferences later, we are getting ready for the fourth multicultural conference that will take place on the campus of the University of Massachusetts here in Boston. They are actually our host sponsor. I'm very happy to be working with them now, and our location will be in their Boston Campus Center. This conference will take place on Thursday, October 28th, from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m., and we have a lot packed in store for those who are going to be in attendance. It's going to be a great event, and I certainly hope that you will be in the house and will be there. We have limited seating. We have limited opportunities for people to participate live, and we want you there, so it's going to be very important for you to register very shortly. Certainly, we'd like to have as many people registered between now and September 30th as possible. What I did also was to look at a lot of the conferences, symposiums, conventions that are either directly connected to or have something to do with diversity, multicultural issues, etc. And I wanted to come up with an opportunity for the everyday person, the person who is working a normal job, someone who certainly are people who are involved in professional leadership positions, but just a wide spectrum of people who could come together and gather at these conferences and talk about multicultural issues and diversity issues. I wanted to do it in a way where the price was affordable. And with that said, we have created a membership campaign. The membership campaign started about 2 years ago. We had a high price point, and then we brought that price point down. So now, for a very low price of $99, you get two things. You have a chance to come to the multicultural conference on October 28th, and then continue to participate with our monthly activities, our newsletter list, et cetera, our website that is getting ready to launch. It will have a members-only section as a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. Like any other very important initiative, this is something where it is not going to go away. I thought it was going to 20 years ago, and here 20 years later, it has not gone away. There are new instances where multiculturalism makes sense and should be discussed on the job, in boardrooms, with projects, with community activities, in the classroom, in the faith-based organization, and certainly at home. And we want to provide an opportunity for our members and those who become members to have an ongoing, continuous dialogue talking about these very important topics, particularly talking about issues that may not be comfortable to discuss on the job. Maybe you have a set of circumstances or a situation where you are at odds with someone because they continue to really crack those very crude and malicious jokes that are not appropriate for anybody's workplace. Maybe you have someone who continues to say something or talks about someone in a way that is passé. They use a terminology that is no longer used to describe a person's ethnicity. Well, the Multicultural Symposium series gives you an opportunity to bring up those kinds of somewhat questionable, uncomfortable, and sometimes undiscussable topics with a group of people who really care and want to know. I did a survey about a year ago and asked some questions of our current members, and they wanted to talk about networking. They wanted to have a place to go where they can discuss some of the issues with the jobs that they have. And so that's what we really want this series to provide, an opportunity to discuss, to dialogue, to get answers, to have resources, to find out an awful lot about people maybe that you don't really understand or know, or a group of individuals or an ethnic group that you are studying. The Multicultural Symposium Series is that place to come. So when we have our conference on October 28th, we are going to be celebrated by our luncheon keynote speaker is William Weld. Bill Wells is the national chair of the National Black MBA Association. We're flying him in from the Minneapolis area, and he will put on a very thought-provoking conversation during lunch. Prior to lunch, we have a keynote speaker, and we have roundtable discussions and panel presentations. It's going to be chock full with topic-driven, content-driven information where people can learn, they can study, and most importantly, they can network with other people. The one thing I know with these multicultural series is that, number one, you're not going to have 5,000 people there. It's going to be a very intimate group of engaged, committed individuals, and you are definitely going to walk out with some extra business cards. So those who attend, they need to bring business cards, because there's going to be an opportunity to really get to know and learn about other people. And I've seen relationships established. I've seen businesses to take off. I have seen other things to happen in other parts of the state of Massachusetts as a direct result of this conference series. So it's an action process. It's an opportunity for you to meet the distinguished speakers, to meet the panelists, to learn more about some of these really tough topics, to discuss why people say really dumb and stupid things when they're running for office, or they're so passionate about being a person who is for freedom or for loyalty or for whatever the cause happens to be, and it completely offends other groups of people. We're going to talk about how to navigate those kind of circumstances and situations that people find themselves in. So this is what you need to do, is to go to our website, www.msssconnect.com. That's www.msssconnect.com, and you can register online directly at the website. That website will then take you to our Eventbrite webpage, and you can register online. If you'd like to call me, feel free to. My number is 508-947-5755, or you can email me at tellcarole, that's T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com, and I'll be happy to register you on the phone or walk you through the process online or talk to you about the various topics and programs and concepts that we're going to talk about at the conference and beyond. This is going to be a conference that you won't want to miss, the fourth annual multicultural conference at the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and we want to thank them as our host sponsor and also thank our other sponsors, Amtrak, DePew, King Printing, Boston, the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Monster.com. And if you'd like to sponsor our event, there's certainly good room for you to do so. Again, you can give us a call at 508-947-5755. 855 and do so. I'd love to bring your company, your organization on board, or perhaps you want to bring a group of employees, maybe 5 or 10 people from your department, who can then engage in this important conversation about diversity and multiculturalism. You could do so by actually giving me a call again at 508-947-5755 or go to the website mssconnect.com to learn more about the Multicultural Conference. That's part of the Multicultural Symposium Series where you can sign up as a new member at only $99. This has been a great show. I've enjoyed each and every one of you, and we'll be back next week live from L.A. on the floor of the National Black Association Conference. See you next week. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon.